Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through J.W. Cole Financial, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC-registered investment advisor. 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Big Show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Boy, the weather is so nice that I'm going down to French Lick to watch the senior PGA stuff. I'll tell you what, it's either that or the Speedway on Sunday, and I may do both. And then a graduation's coming up for a lot of the high schoolers. So this is my life. We have kids that are, those are my good friends, all graduating high school. So four or five open houses to go to. You know, cost me a lot of money and gifts, so it's going to be a good weekend for sure. Have a good show today. Lance Like, of course, he's an elder care attorney here in Bloomington, is going to be joining me in just a few minutes to talk about asset protection and, you know, when does it make sense to start thinking about giving assets away. We're going to get through some long-term care issues, Medicaid. It's going to be a good show, so hang with us throughout this entire hour. Before that, let's do a little news of the week, of course, brought to you by our guest, Lance Like of the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call my friend Lance at the Like Law Group, 323-8300. You know, the Supreme Court just ruled in a decisive way that 401k providers or companies that provide 401ks need to bone up and make sure that the funds that are in the plan are the best that they can be, at least from an expense perspective. Tibble versus Edison International, a lawsuit originally filed back in 2007 by an Edison retirement plan participant against the company. At the heart of the suit focused on six retail share classes that were more expensive than new institutional share classes. This is going to continue to gain traction. I was actually up in Indianapolis this past week, and we were talking to a group that was responsible for the retirement plan of the company. And the fiduciary responsibility of that group, you could feel the weight on their shoulders as they not only looked at who was going to give advice, but look at the funds, look at the information that was available to educate the participants. So this is on the minds of a lot of 401k providers in the companies. What's next for oil prices? Well, the Financial Times, they said, it's up 40% from the March lows, and it's dragged energy stocks higher through the beginning of the month. It's also turned a little bit towards maybe inflation expectations are a little higher now, and fixed income markets are certainly showing that. One thing I will tell you, that there's a lot of folks that are saying this is way out of whack, and that the oil prices could get back down into the 45 range by mid-October. So I'm hoping we'll see oil prices stick in that $60 range. That's good for us. It's good for the oil companies. It's good for everybody. Living paycheck to paycheck on $75,000 a year. If you're struggling to save money and you think that a larger paycheck is the key to solving all your problems, a new report suggests that it may not be completely true. Almost one-third of survey respondents making $75,000 or more live paycheck to paycheck, and so do one-fourth of the respondents making over $100,000 a year. The secret to saving is as much as a mindset as it is an income issue. And that's what Doug Hughes will talk about next week when he's on the show. He's been really working hard preparing a show on investor behavior and just financial stuff that we all do and why it's in our minds and why we do the things we do. And he'll tell you that it's usually not an income problem, it's a spending problem. Janet Yellen is saying that the Fed is going to be less predictable. The Federal Reserve chairperson told the Banking Committee on Tuesday the central bank is in no hurry to raise interest rates. Basically, she's saying be patient. She's saying the job labor force participation is disappointing, anemic wage growth. She said it could be several months before the Fed would boost the rates, and that's why I think you've seen stocks go up even higher. What's one of the biggest regrets that baby boomers have in retirement? Well, not working long enough. Many American workers have begun proclaiming the end of retirement, at 65 or 66, but a new Allianz study suggests that 82% of boomers who retired say they wish they would have kept working. Is it for the money? No, it's for the interaction and being around people. 41% of the baby boomers said it was for the money, but the majority of those said it's just because they want to continue to be around people. We're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we'll be joined by attorney Lance Like, who's my guest tonight. We're going to be talking about elder care and just all kinds of good information today. It's not just the general information, but it's practical information that you can use. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, everyone, welcome back to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Of course, if you don't catch it in its entirety at 6 o'clock on Thursday night, you can always catch it on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. and then on WGCLRadio.com. Lance Like, elder care attorney here in Bloomington, is my guest. And Lance, as we talk about asset protection, I want to talk about things that are practical, you know, not just giving information, but giving some advice and some direction to people listening to the big show. So, you know, I can tell you it happens every single week, Lance. Somebody walks in my office, sets down, who's been retired maybe 10 years or so, and they say, I think I want to start giving my money away to protect it. And I always come back with a question and say, why do you want to do that? And it's usually because they want to protect it from the government. They think that if they go into the nursing home, the government's going to take all their money. And I usually have to correct them and say, it's not the government taking all the money. It's the nursing home that's going to take all the money, and then the government will start paying for it after that. But Lance, you know that people are very concerned about asset protection. One of the things you do very well is help people protect the assets they have, the hard-earned assets they have. But I think my question to you is, when should someone start considering doing some asset protection planning?
Well, David, there's not a real easy answer to that, and there's a lot of potential disadvantages and risk of giving away assets. But certainly in my clients, whenever they're, you know, certainly in their 70s, they're really concerned about the high cost of nursing home care. So we'll talk to them about the potential options there to do some planning to protect assets.
So some of the big pitfalls of giving assets away, obviously when you give it away, you've given it away and you don't have it anymore and it's now that person's asset. There are some major disadvantages and pitfalls of giving your money away.
Right. So sometimes clients want to give away their assets or think they want to give away their assets directly to their kids. So I always counsel them about the bad things that can happen. So, for example, a child may go through a divorce. The parent has given away that asset, and now it's the child's. If the child goes through a divorce, they may lose part of that through a dissolution. If the child gets sued or has a creditor or tax lien, they could lose those assets. And even though the child may intend to protect those for the parent if they needed it later. Another thing that could happen potentially is if the child dies before the parent. Now it goes to a daughter-in-law or son-in-law or grandchild who may not have the same feelings for the parent, may not have the same kind of ethical obligation or think they have the same ethical obligation to take care of mom and dad.
So you'd rather have a Camaro convertible or something like that.
So there's some bad things that can happen. There's some pitfalls for making outright gifts.
So if someone wants to protect their assets and they want to start giving them away, they don't have to give it to a person. They can actually give it to a trust.
Right. And so there are special types of trusts. These are not for everyone, and so that's why we want to sit down and counsel them, talk about the pros and cons. But there are special types of trusts that we use occasionally in planning for, you know, potential long-term care issues where we can protect the assets. But again, you know, those are intricate devices, and we want to make sure the clients understand those.
Is that about the only reason in your practice, too, that people want to give away money or assets now while they're still living is because of the nursing home?
Well, that's a big issue. And then, obviously, you know, you've got clients that want to make gifts to their children so the children can actually use it or help pay for a grandchild's college expenses, you know, helping with a down payment of a house. So there, you know, everybody's situation is unique. So there are other areas, but that concern with nursing home costs, that's a big one.
And Medicaid obviously is what a lot of these folks are attempting to qualify for. If you give away all your assets, all of your money, and you do need to go into a nursing home, then you may qualify for Medicaid. There's also an income test when it comes to Medicaid, not just asset tests. So there are some people out there, I guess my point is, that don't have a lot of assets but have a lot of income that still may not qualify completely. But Lance, it's not as easy as just saying, you know what, I think I'm going to go into a nursing home tomorrow, and I'm going to give everything away. I'm going in to the doors, and Medicaid is going to start paying. It's just not even close to that simple.
No, there's a five, what is referred to as a look-back period. So it's a five-year look-back period. So any assets that have been gifted within 5 years of applying for Medicaid have to be disclosed. And, you know, we're not hiding anything, so planning may involve gifts. And so we disclose that to Medicaid. If you don't disclose it, there's fraud. You can get mm-hmm. in big trouble with that. So obviously, we don't want folks, you know, not disclosing what has happened. But whenever the assets are transferred, again, there's this five-year look-back period, and then there will be a penalty period, a period of time where Medicaid will not pay for the person's nursing home care based on the value of that gift.
So that penalty period, if you're doing emergency planning right at the last minute, you'll have a penalty period that normally applies if you're giving away some assets. But if you're forward thinking and you say, hey, I may want to start transferring this stuff now, I'm 75, and maybe you don't have any long-term care issues until you're 85, you've got 10 years behind you.
Right.
And that's probably a more proactive way to do it than what you and I both deal with a lot of times, and that's the crisis planning.
Right. So you're right. So if someone does do some planning, which may involve using these special types of trusts, there's still a five-year look-back period. Mm-hmm. But if you get beyond that five-year period before you apply for Medicaid, then those assets will be protected. Even in a crisis case, so if clients haven't done anything, they're going into the nursing home, there are things that can be done. And we may be able to protect half, perhaps even a little bit more than that, of their assets.
When we come back from the break, we want to talk to people about even those that are in an emergency situation. If you don't have the proper documents, and they have to be the correct type of documents in place to allow your loved ones to do some of this planning on your behalf, because a lot of times these folks are in an incapacitated state, or maybe mentally they can't make decisions. They have Alzheimer's or maybe a form of dementia. You need to have these documents in place. And that's really what we're trying to do, folks, is inform you and then encourage you to do the right thing right now. You know, more people do spend time planning that summer vacation, I can attest to that, than they do planning their estate. So we're going to come back, continue with Lance Like. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Lance Like, elder care attorney, is here in the studio live. And we've been talking about asset protection, when it makes sense to begin gifting. And you don't want to do it too late. One of the things that we definitely wanted to discuss with everyone out there is doing the things right now so that when you get into this crisis mode of mom needing or dad needing to go into a care facility, they have, you know, some money and they're trying to protect and trying to get a Medicaid. Lance, there has to be some certain documents in place so that the kids can actually do this planning on behalf of mom and dad. And a lot of times it's just too little too late.
Sure. One of the most important documents, I always emphasize this to clients, advisors like you, is the power of attorney, the financial power of attorney. And it happens all the time. I have, you know, a child, let's say, calls us up, wants to meet because their mom or dad is going into the nursing home. And so one of the first documents we want to look at is the power of attorney, if they have one. So sometimes the child will say, well, mom gave me a power of attorney 5 years ago or mm-hmm. 10 years ago, so we're okay, right? I can do anything for mom that's needed. Well, not so fast. Let's look at the document. And oftentimes, although they can certainly pay bills, handle investment decisions, file tax returns, maybe even sell the house, they are handcuffed when it comes to doing the planning we're talking about. And the power of attorney may totally limit them or eliminate the possibility of doing what we need to do. And so there are certain provisions we always look for, and oftentimes those are lacking in the power of attorney document.
Yeah, so you definitely need to go see Lance and get that worked out now and not wait until it's too late. Let's go back and talk about gifting again, because one of the things that we've discussed is gifting to people versus gifting to trust. And there are trusts, and it's not your typical living trust. A lot of folks have a revocable living trust or some type of a trust that's that they can change anytime they want. You know, they started it, they benefit from it. It's really just a probate avoidance trust. It doesn't really do anything from an asset protection standpoint, doesn't save them taxes. So, Lance, it's not your run-of-the-mill living trust that a person needs.
Right.
It's more of an irrevocable trust. Talk us through that just for a second.
So the title on the document really doesn't matter. It's really the provisions within the document. But, yes, for a trust to work for Medicaid purposes, then it needs to be an irrevocable trust. And what clients need to understand is they are giving up their access to the assets. But there are certain backdoor ways that we can build in, certain flexibility that we can build in. And that's why we just need to walk the clients through that. And again, there's still the five-year look-back period. but it protects those assets much better than making an outright gift against, you know, a child dying out of order, a child getting sued, or going through a divorce. It protects those assets.
And when we talk about gifting, you know, folks think, okay, if I gift to someone, I've heard about this thing called a gift tax. And usually when I'll teach the Retirement Planning Today course, which is what we based our Today's Guide to Retirement Planning book on, I'll say, who out there believes that if you give $100,000 away today to somebody, that either you're going to have to pay some tax, they're going to have to pay some tax, someone's going to have to pay some tax. Inevitably, everyone raises their hand. They think that there's going to be a tax paid. And Lance, that's just simply not the case. And in most people's world, where the gift tax limits are from a lifetime exclusion ratio standpoint, is probably not a big deal. But can you talk to people about this gift tax?
Sure. So first of all, anyone can give away up to $14,000 per person per year, and that's the IRS's freebie. You can give away more than that, and there is a lifetime exemption, which this year is $5,430,000.
That's a lot.
That is a lot of money.
And if you're married, that you get it twice.
You get it twice. You get more. You get $10.8 million. So if you let's say someone gave away $114,000 to their child, the 14 is a freebie. The 100. Yes, technically they're supposed to file a gift tax return, but there won't be any gift tax owing because that will just reduce their $5,430,000 exemption that they can use down to $5,330,000. They've used $100,000 of that exemption.
So even if you have $1 million farm, folks, and you're saying, I want to start giving this away, but I can only give little increments each and every year, you can give it all away if you want. You just have to file a gift tax return saying it's no longer $5,400,000 some change that I have to give away in my life. Now it's $4 million and some change. Not that big of a deal. Lance, I know a lot of folks think this is easy. Just gift it away into the trust and you wait it out the 5 years. But not all assets are easily gifted, like IRAs, for an example.
Right. The IRAs are, you know, typically those are not going to be transferred because, as you know, they would have to withdraw the money from the IRA, pay the income tax on the whole thing, and then make a gift, whether it's into trust or outright. So typically, that's the last asset. Now, in a crisis case, you know, maybe that's appropriate. But for most folks, you know, they're not going to be doing that.
Yeah, and that's a big problem because nowadays, that is typically the biggest asset from a financial standpoint is their retirement account. And you're right. I mean, that retirement account has a big old bite ready to be taken out of it. It's called the tax man. So you have to be really careful. And, you know, there are ways to do it in a scheduled manner. And we've done that before with folks that you've set up some trust for our clients where we had a plan that over 3 or 4 or 5 years we'll take out pieces, pay the tax. It's kind of similar to a Roth conversion in a way. Pull it out, pay the tax, move it over to the trust. So, again, get with someone. If you're concerned about this, they can walk you through this process, get you with someone who's qualified like Lance like to draft the documents and make sure you do it correctly. One of the things, Lance, that I know giving away assets can do to people is, and they don't even know this, that if going back to my farm example, great-granddad bought this farm for pennies on the dollar, and now it's the richest, greatest farmland in southern Indiana, and it's a lot of acreage. He probably paid $20,000 for it. It's now worth $1 million, and he says, you know what, I want to get this out of my name. I'm going to give it away. So he gives it away, and 5 years go by. Fine, we're out of the woods from a Medicaid look-back perspective, but what the kids don't realize is that when granddad or great-granddad gave that property to them, they also gave him, he gave them his cost basis. And that's one of those little tax traps that a lot of people just don't have any clue about. Isn't that correct?
Right. So that's what we refer to as a carryover basis. So in your example, the grandchildren have a $20,000 basis. If they sell that farm for $1 million, they've got to pay capital gains on the difference. So that's one of the downsides of making outright gifts. If instead he were to have utilized a trust, there are special provisions that can be included in that trust that could get that five-year clock ticking for Medicaid, but still allow what's referred to as a step-up in basis at his death. So the children would take a new basis to equal to the fair market value when the grandfather grandfather passes away.
Yeah, so folks, if you give something at your death and it's a highly appreciated asset and it goes to people, then they receive a stepped up cost basis. So they inherit that at the date of death value. They sell it, no taxes due. And not only is the gift tax $5,400,000 and some change, but that's also Lance the federal estate tax limit. And in Indiana, we virtually have no, I mean, there's a little bitty unknown thingy about inheritance taxes, but for all practical purposes, there are no inheritance taxes in Indiana either. So people are in the clear on this stuff, but they worry about things they shouldn't worry about. And I always say people to people, you're worrying about stuff you shouldn't worry about. You really need to be worrying about this over here. I have an example of someone, and we're going to take a break, that made this mistake of giving this farm away in exactly this manner. They probably paid less than $50,000. It's probably worth somewhere around $1 million. And now they're having that oh no moment. So when we come back, we're going to talk about a way to possibly undo that and fix it. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. You can hear us on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. or Saturday mornings at 9, or always on WGCLRadio.com. And, you know, we gave away a lot of those free ebooks on Today's Guide to Retirement Planning, the resource for adults ages 50 and over, the book that Doug Hughes and I put together. It took us a couple of years to make it happen, but we're really proud of it. And we burnt through them all last week. So I know I said I had three left. I ended up having five left, and we had more than that asked for them. So you can go on any online retailer and check it out. I think the hard copy is around $16, and you can buy an ebook for about $3 or $3.50. So go check it out and let us know what you think. I mean, you know, even though we put a lot of time and effort into it, it doesn't mean it's really that good. So if you can be honest with us and say, hey, you should have done this or done that. But we're actually working on a book number two already. We're going to kind of build out on this series of Today's Guide 2. And you probably know from hearing Ryan Belcher and Wayne Thacker on the radio show 2-3 times a year, we focus on Indiana retirement benefits. So if you're in the IMPERF system, which means you're a PERF person, a teacher, even police and fire, when we talk about them and federal employees, we're going to be writing a book on Today's Guide to Your Indiana Retirement Benefits, and it's going to be specific to you. So that should be out sometime this fall. We'll hopefully that will happen. But my track record of telling you when things will be out is not very good, because you can remember when I talked about this book to be released by the end of 2014, and that didn't happen. But I think if I even backed it up, I could have said that by the summer of 2014 and maybe even by the end of 2013. So you guys know the story. I know it took at least 2 years to get this thing done, because in Chapter 6, when we talk about inheritance and how the baby boomers look at inheritance different than the children of the Depression or the Bob Hope generation, remember, my then 12-year-old son, Will, he's now 14, said, hey, Dad, whenever you die, do I get all of this? And you remember my response, no, son, Mom and I are going to spend all of it, and then we're going to burn our house down. Well, it said 12-year-old son, he's now 14, so I knew it had to take to at least 2 years. Hey, also, don't forget, the Real Estate Expo is coming up. Attend the 2015 Real Estate Expo at the Westin in Indianapolis. I was just up there today, June 5th and 6th. Tickets are online at REIExpo.com. That's REIExpo.com. And save 15% with promo code INDY15. So again, promo code INDY15. I don't know much about that, but I'm kind of a real estate guy. I may have to check that out. Actually, I'm going camping that weekend, so no, I'm not. Lance Lyke is my guest. Those are the random thoughts, Lance, that just run through my head and I happen to share with everyone on the air. And, you know, as we were talking about asset protection, gifting, all these different things, one thing that came up just this past week, Lance, was, and I shared it with you prior to coming on the show so that you could do all the research for me to make sure I had it right. The exact situation we talked about earlier, when a person gave a farm away several years ago, like 15 years ago, the cost basis on it, no one really knows, but they think it's probably $30,000 to $40,000. They think it's worth somewhere between $800 and $1 million now. They did it to protect the farm in case mom and dad needed to go into a nursing home, practically their only real asset. They are now 90 years old, and they're not in great shape, but they're unlikely to go into a nursing home. They say, you know what, they have congestive heart failure. I mean, there's some sign. And I was talking to him. I said, you know, the problem is, folks, whenever they die, you're going to pay the taxes on all of this gain on the real estate, and there might be a way around this. What about re-gifting it, giving it back to mom or dad, and when they die, then you'll inherit that at a stepped-up basis at the $800 or $1 million. Then when you sell it, no taxes due. I went over to Lance. I said, to me, it sounds like a great idea, but there has to be some rule out there that says you got to have it for at least a year or two. And Lance, you did the research for me and came through.
Right. So in order to for that to really work, then if the kids are giving it back to the parents, parents have to live at least a year before they pass away and then give it back to the kids through, you know, an inheritance. And we talked about the gift tax issues. So there, you know, there may be gift tax issues. You know, if the children had larger estates and they were giving this property back, it's going to be treated as a $1 million gift back to the parents. And then the parents, when they die and pass it back to them, back to the kids, they're using up $1 million of their exemption. But as, you know, we talked about, over $5 million estate tax exemption, for many folks, even if we're talking about a large amount of money, like $1 million, it may not really matter, but they need to get some proper advice before they do that.
Yeah, and if they're married, of course, this is transfer, it's portable, so they have over $10 million. Lance, let's talk a little bit about beneficiary planning. This is big in my world. I'm always checking beneficiaries, making sure we have contingent beneficiaries. If you have an inherited account, you have successor beneficiaries. Pretty ate up about it, in fact. And when you look at proper beneficiary planning, a lot of folks don't, first of all, even know who their beneficiaries are. And then secondly, if they're doing some of the planning that we're talking about, it's really important that they know who the beneficiaries are, because if you die and you have the wrong beneficiary, the money might get back and be exposed again. So talk us through some of the importance of beneficiary planning.
Well, just as you said, it's critical to look at those, because those types of assets, retirement assets, life insurance, those assets will pass according to that beneficiary form regardless of what the client's will or trust mm-hmm. says. So the beneficiary form trumps all of that. So that needs to be coordinated with their goals and objectives. And just today I was meeting with a couple, and although they were sure they had one another as the primary beneficiary, they said, well, we don't even think we've filled out anybody as the contingent beneficiary. And so they're going to go back and double check that and in their case, list the children, obviously.
I know a lot of times when you're married and you're planning for one spouse that might need to go into a nursing home or need some care and you're trying to get them eligible, the communal spouse, the one still living at home, has some protections like the house, some money, some cars, and let's say it's a retirement account. Well, let's say that this spouse was staying at home. They have a $100,000 retirement account. Dad's at the nursing home, and everything's kosher. But then mom dies before dad, and mom never changed her beneficiary from dad to maybe the kids.
Right.
Well, now it lands back in the lap of dad, who's in the nursing home. Well, guess what, folks? He gets booted off of Medicaid, and that money's now going to be sucked away by the nursing home.
Right, and you raise a great point, because when we're doing Medicaid planning for couples, we may be able to do a lot to protect most, if not all, of those assets for the well spouse, the one in the community. But the next step is we need to update their estate plan, check on the beneficiary designations, because if that spouse at home dies before the nursing home spouse, we don't want to now dump everything back into the nursing home spouse's name. We may use a special needs trust that would keep that exempt, and so it would be protected still for the nursing home spouse perhaps, but not count against them for Medicaid. Or perhaps there are some assets that are going to go to the kids. But those are certain things that we've got to make sure we cover.
And another reason to have contingent beneficiaries, and we talk about contingent, folks, it's your backup. You know, if your first beneficiary dies and your contingent step up to be primary, but there's something else that can be done when you have contingent beneficiaries, and that's a disclaimer. You know, money comes to me, but I don't want it. I want it to go to my son, Will, instead. So it kind of passes through me. So you can, I guess, avoid some of these pitfalls by just in the very beginning having good, solid primary beneficiaries, good, solid contingent beneficiaries, and that'll help solve at least most of the problems. Hey, we're going to take another break. When we come back, I want to talk about insuring for long-term care, because one of the things that could solve a lot of these problems we're worrying about is having the money to pay for it in the first place. There's a couple ways to do it. You can pay for it yourself, or you can insure it, or you can do what we were just talking about, doing some asset protection, hoping Medicaid picks it up. We'll be right back to talk about insuring for long-term care. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Boy, the weather is shaping up for a beautiful weekend, beautiful Memorial Day weekend. Of course, we have Senior PGA down at French Lick, which I'm going to spend a little time down there enjoying that. And then hopefully a great time at the track on Sunday for the 99th running of the Indianapolis 500. So, of course, those of you that have listened to the show for a long time know that I love auto racing, and particularly the Indianapolis 500. Lance Like is my guest. He's the elder care attorney here in Bloomington, the Like Law Group. And, of course, for years I've given him credit for sponsoring News of the Week, and that really wasn't an official sponsorship. I just liked saying it. So every week for the last, I don't know how many years, it's Lance Like of the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. I told Lance before the show, I said, well, listen to this one. I'm going to blow it up. And without any cards or anything, I was able to repeat the number. Something funny. This week when I called Lance, I called him on his cell phone. We talk, and I said, hey, how about I call you on your office number? What's your office number? And he starts to give it to me. I'm like, oh, wait a second. I know. And I've only been saying it for the last 10 years, it seems. So I got it. 323-8300 if you want to get with Lance. Hey, let's talk about having the money to pay for long-term care. You know, when we talk about long-term care, we've talked about nursing homes, but who wants to go there? Lance, there's also two other options. One is an assisted living facility, and then third, one that most people seem to prefer, staying at home. And as we talked about getting qualified for Medicaid, I mean, the problem with Medicaid is it doesn't pay for a lot of this other stuff.
Right. It's very unlikely that you're going to get any Medicaid to pay for an assisted living facility. There could be some Medicaid benefits for someone at home. The qualification generally is the same if you went into a nursing home. So it's the same rules.
So a lot of folks, as we talk to, and it's hard. I mean, you look at someone's assets, their income, and you say, okay, here is what we estimate the cost of home health care, assisted living, and nursing home to be. This is how much we think you could pay for yourself. And then there's a gap in coverage, money that you're going to need to come up with from somewhere else. Do you want to burn through your assets? Do you want to preserve your assets? And then you come up with a number. And then you look at different ways to cover long-term care, long-term care insurance. Typically, in the past, we would look at a traditional long-term care policy. You pay premiums like health insurance. If you ever need it, it kicks in and it pays for a period of time. And there's some Indiana plans that allow some asset protection and Medicaid qualification. But Lance, I'm seeing a lot of people that have moved away from that concept because, one, the policies aren't terribly easy to get any longer, and two, they're kind of expensive, and three, people have this hang-up that if I don't use it, I'm going to lose it. So I know when you have folks come in and talk with you pre-planning, when these things come up, I know you're a proponent of people at least exploring the idea of insuring themselves.
Right. And, you know, I'm certainly no expert on the long-term care insurance, but I can talk to them about some of the options, and then I refer them to somebody like you that can better educate them and go through the options for, you know, whether it's a traditional long-term care policy or one of these newer hybrid type policies.
Yeah, one of the newer hybrids is life insurance. And I want to have a word of caution to people because as we talk about asset protection, this is something that we bounced off of Lance last year because it kind of hit me one day. All right, we can buy a life insurance policy that has a $500,000 death benefit, but that death benefit can also be accelerated for long-term care if needed. Pretty cool because we're all going to die, so that money's going to go to someplace, but it has some cash value in it. And I thought, you know what? That's an asset. And I've been through this enough with Lance to know that whenever you start listing your assets, cash value of a life insurance policy is a countable asset. So Lance, I thought, you mean they're going to make me blow up my long-term care rider on my life insurance policy and use up my cash? And when we dug into a little bit deeper, the answer was, yeah, as stupid as it might sound. So a very easy solution is if you buy one of these policies, make someone else the owner. You can still be the insured. Your spouse can still be the beneficiary, but make someone else the owner. And it can be a trust owned. It can be an individual owned, but make someone else the owner. Lance, that's something that I guarantee has been overlooked by a lot of people because right. It was overlooked by me.
Right. And again, the same discussion we had before about who owns that asset needs to be held with the client. So maybe using a trust that would own that particular policy might be the best solution so that if a child died before them or had a divorce or a creditor situation, it doesn't jeopardize that policy.
And then also the annuity world. And I know for those of you annuity haters out there, you think annuities are expensive. Listen, there's all kinds of different annuities. There's fixed annuities, indexed annuities, variable annuities, and immediate annuities. But there's also an annuity, and just listen to me, an annuity, the only reason is an annuity is issued by an insurance company. So that's really it. It's the different types of annuities. They all have different purposes. So what this is it truly is a long-term care benefit. So you put on deposit, let's say $100,000. The insurance company, in the form of an annuity, may give you $300,000 of long-term care benefit. I had a situation this week. A person can't get life insurance. She has COPD. She did not qualify for traditional long-term care. But the annuity contract only had four questions, and none of them were knockout questions for her. $200,000 deposit, she's 74 years old, is going to provide almost $500,000 of long-term care for her. We haven't got it officially approved yet, but listen, that's an idea. And you still have access to your cash if you need it. So there are different ways to come up with money to pay for this stuff. And Lance, another way, and it's been advertised by a lot of what I'm going to call scrupulous annuity salespeople who have said, hey, listen, I can get you on veterans benefits. If you've served during wartime, I can get you on veterans benefits. It's a tough process, but Lance, I know we want to spend some time on this because it's something that is very, very important for people to know about. It's a little known benefit to most people. I've heard you talk about it on commercials here on the station. Walk us through this little known veterans benefit.
So if a veteran, and they have to have been in the military during a period of war, and the VA sets those dates. So if they qualify during as serving during that period of war, and they need long-term care, whether it's at home, assisted living, or nursing home, they may be eligible for this little-known VA benefit that could pay if it was the veteran that needed the care and they were married, they could get over $2,000 a month of additional income to help with that care. There are income rules and there are asset rules. So just because they served in the military during that period of time doesn't mean they automatically qualify.
Now, unlike Medicaid, the rules on income and assets is a little bit foggier, isn't it?
Right. So there's no hard and set rule, but the general rule of thumb is the assets, the countable assets, have to be below $80,000 for a couple or $40,000 for a single person. But there are planning opportunities. So even if a couple's assets are above that, there are planning opportunities to qualify them and get their assets below that.
And unlike Medicaid, as far as I understand, the VA does not have a look-back period yet?
That's correct. But it has been proposed. The VA has proposed having a 3-year look-back period, I believe. I'm looking at some of my notes here. But they are proposing that. It has not passed. If it does pass, we do not know when it would be effective. So there is, you know, now there's kind of a planning opportunity before that becomes a rule.
So let me walk you through a practical example in one I've been involved with personally. Person has dementia, moving into Alzheimer's. They're not nursing home ready, so they're staying at home. They went through all of their money. For the most part, 2 years it took them to get through it for home health care. It's not inexpensive, folks. They have about $2,000 to $3,000 a month of income coming in and about $1,000 a month of expenses. So we helped him apply for his veterans benefit some time ago. In fact, according to the VA, Lance, it was July of 2014. We hadn't heard anything. And just about a week ago, we heard something. They said, we are reviewing your application. 10 months later. And here's what we need. We need your DD-214, which is your separation from active service, and we need a caregiver statement saying what you need help with and how much it costs. And to help your case, if you want to get a doctor's statement, we sure would like to have that too. And by the way, if you don't give us any of this stuff in 30 days, we're going to make a decision anyway. So first of all, you're like, okay, the DD-214, we can get that, but they need an original, or they need a certified copy. Well, this person served during Korea in 1952. So as you look for an original DD-214, you're like sweating bullets. Is there one? Well, finally, they uncover one. And thankfully, because on the website of wherever you get these certified copies, my wife said, you know what? They say that if you served before 1955, first of all, it took at least 4 weeks to get a certified copy. At least 4 weeks. They say 4 to 6. But if you served before 1955... there was only a 50-50 chance they could even get you one. So I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, this all sounds really good, but the devil's in the details in this stuff, and you're going to have to work hard at it, and you probably will get frustrated, and you'll get mad, and you may just throw the towel in. I think a lot of people think that's what they hope that you'll do. But Lance, I was talking to you before the show, and you know people that have received this benefit, that are benefiting from this benefit, and it's a real benefit, but just a word of caution, it may not be as easy as it appears on the cover.
Yes, and so it is, and you know, sometimes could be an onerous process. It may take a long time. But other instances, you know, it's only been a 2 or 3 month process that I've heard, and they've gotten the benefit. But it is certainly there, and the benefits, even though they may take several months to approve it, they are retroactive to the date that they apply.
Yeah, so in this case, all the way back to July 24th of 2014, you know, they may get a check, a big one, and that would really help. We're going to take a break, folks. Come back, wrap up the show, preview what's coming up next week. Lance Lyke has been our guest, talking elder care. And, of course, again, if you didn't hear the show in its entirety, catch it Saturday morning. It's going to be a beautiful day, 9 a.m., and always on WGCLradio.com. We'll be right back to wrap up the show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Next week's show, Doug Hughes will be in studio with me. We're going to be talking about behavioral finance. You know, what are people doing that they're doing right, and what are the things that they're ignoring that they should not ignore? And, you know, Doug and I were talking about this today as he prepares for the show for next week. And, you know, we talk so much about the pre-retiree and retiree folks and all the issues and hurdles they have to get over. And, you know, what we thought we'd do is back it up a little bit and talk to those 40-somethings. You know, maybe those Gen Xers, the millennials, and talk about, hey, what do you need to be doing? What are you doing wrong? What are some things you need to do right now? Because, you know, you've heard me talk about how fast times goes. And as I think about life and the life cycle that people go through, you know, you get out of school, you get a job, next thing you know, you're spending a little bit of money because you never had money before. Then you have your first child, you get married, have your first child, you maybe move into a new home, get a second child, and then all of a sudden you're 35. And then, you know, you're kind of worrying about this, worrying about that, trying to save for kids' education, and then you're 45, and then you're 50, and then it's like, oh my gosh, what happened to time? So you just have to jump on this stuff early, and Doug's going to be in to help us through that. Lance Lyke was my guest. Lance, thank you so much. If folks want to reach out to Lance, again, just reach out to us. We can connect you with him, or 323-8300. I know that number by heart. Have a great week, everyone. We'll talk to you again next Thursday night. Goodbye. Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Guest opinions on this show do not necessarily represent those of the radio station, David Hayes, or CFCI. You should always consult with an investment professional before making important investment decisions. Investment advice offered through CFCI, an SEC registered investment advisor, 674 South College Avenue, Bloomington, Indiana.